It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Well, I think you can satisfy both. If you're scared, you're going to stay back a little bit and you're going to watch it. But there are other people that are scared about being locked in a room and losing their job and not having any income. And, you know, for the first time, these are workers. These are people that want to get back and work and make a living. And they're afraid their job's not going to be there. And at a certain point, if you keep it going too long, that's going to happen. So I understand that very well.
Sandy Rios with you. Yes, as this morning, as many, many states, about half, I think, are opening up to some extent. The president said it well last night at the town hall for Fox on the right below the Lincoln Monument. I have to say that's one of my favorite places in D.C. My husband often and I ride our bikes to the Lincoln Memorial, climb up, and are always just moved by the writing on the walls, Abraham Lincoln's words, his angst over the war, his, you know, calling out to God, his declarations. It's just an amazing place, and that's where the president chose to be last night with Brett Baer and Martha McCallum. So that's what he said. He said some people are afraid, and so they should stay home. And then others are more afraid of not being able to feed their families, and they want to get back to work. I understand that. I'll leave it to the president to speak common sense, and that's what he was doing last night. Of course, I want to, this morning, give you kind of an idea of what's happening around the states as best I can. Remember, there are 50, so I have trouble keeping up with them, but I just want to give you a taste. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, is getting a lot of attention because he has really been fighting back on the media. He says, first of all, they had declared disaster in terms of death numbers in Florida, and he basically said that never happened. And he said, over the past 10 days, Florida's positivity rate for new cases have come in roughly 95% of the tests that we have been doing on people have come back negative, 95%. Nevertheless, down on one of the beaches in Florida that's beginning to open up, an attorney dressed from head to toe as the Grim Reaper, you know, with the pointed hat, the sickle, everything, does this interview with an ABC reporter on the sand. Interesting, because as a media person, I watched her, Faith Graham is her name. She hands the microphone to this attorney on the beach in Florida as he criticizes Ron DeSantis and the, you know, how dangerous it is to open up, and that's why he's dressed like the Grim Reaper. The tell on that is, you know, as a reporter or as someone in media, you never hand the microphone to a guest. You don't do that. That's very dangerous. So it's a, you know, let's just say ABC was helping this gentleman get his message out. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., you may be wondering what's happening. The lockdown there is draconian. And nevertheless, thousands of people gathered on the Mall near the Washington Monument and also the Capitol building watching the Blue Angels and the Air Force Thunderbirds fly over. In fact, in Virginia, same thing. Lots of people gathered. They just are desperate. They were defying orders by doing that. They're not supposed to be out. The instruction about having the Blue Angels fly over, they had not encouraged people to go out of their houses. They told them to watch from their houses, but people went out because they, you know, people need to be free. That's what our founding fathers thought, and that's why they did what they did. There was a rally in Virginia on Thursday. It was a reopened Virginia rally, and the Richmond Times-Dispatch had a picture on the cover of a guy waving a flag, and the... The comments were just hilarious. They're not hilarious. They were very disparaging, insulting. He's waving an American flag. They accuse him of trying to strike a doctor nearby, of all of these things. It turns, and of course, he's a redneck, overweight, all the bad things you might say about a person like that. Turns out he's a complete French speaker, highly educated, a novelist, and he didn't exactly follow the stereotype. Actually, we hope to interview him tomorrow, but I just wanted to tease you about that happening. in Virginia. Meanwhile, in Virginia, someone we both know, we all know, you would know him, but let me just say he was shopping in Wegmans in Virginia, and he took a picture of a woman walking down the grocery store line with her cart and her, you know, face mask, but she had a measuring tape extended to the full 6 feet. And she was wielding the measuring tape around her head, threatening anyone that got near her. He got a picture of it. She looks otherwise sane. She looks like a normal person in a jacket with her hair. But, you know, that's what she's doing because, you know, we got to protect ourselves. And you people of the earth, get out of my way. And you better wear a mask. And you better stand at 6 feet or you will feel the wrath of many people. And at some point, we will open the phone lines and talk about how you feel about all those social distancing rules. But I want to continue with my little potpourri here, my walk around the country. From Arizona, a friend of mine sent me a picture of several big like billboards. And one of them, I can't totally read to you, but it says, "Ducey, why are you blanking us?" Not as bad as you might think. The word is not that bad, but it's a word I still don't want to use. "Ducey, why are you," in other words, "messing with us?" And then it says, "Virus deaths 326 out of a population of 7.2 million. In other words, 4 deaths per 100,000. That's what's on this big billboard. And then it says, "Join us, PPP class action suit." So they're filing a class action suit out there for the closures and the difficulty, the impossibility they placed on their economy. In California, a little restaurant opened up because she says, the proprietor says, "I will not survive another month. This place is my livelihood and it's being taken away from me." And so there are a lot of protests in California around several different cities. Huntington Beach had protests. And here's something. Judge Alito, the Supreme Court justice, this week ordered the Pennsylvania government to respond to arguments from a variety of Pennsylvanians asking the Supreme Court to halt enforcement of Governor Tom Wolf's strict stay-at-home orders because they say it's unconstitutional. And I wish I had more time. Let's just say that Governor Justice Alito said, all right, Pennsylvania, if you think that you are not violating the Constitution, your governor isn't violating the Constitution, then you got to respond to this. And so that's pretty notable that he's making them do that. I think it's very notable. There was a North Carolina tattoo parlor owner who stood on his porch before he was arrested. By the way, his name is Matthew Jax Myers. He has children. He's afraid he's going to lose his home. He said he can't feed his kids. And he said that in the strip mall where he runs his tattoo factory, Apex Tattoo Factory, the governor has allowed a marijuana store to open. And they're in the same. He's not saying that. Other people reported that. And so Matthew Jax Myers stood on his porch right before he was arrested. And this is what he said. I wanted you to hear it. Clip one.
"As a father of three kids, I'm doing what I think every real American would. No officer of the law should ever be forced to set aside their moral and constitutional belief to arrest hardworking citizens. And so for that, I'm both sad and ashamed to do this with these fine Americans. I am eternally sorry. I'm sorry to the Apex Town Council and Mayor who have backed this community and small businesses 110%. I also want to reassure you that the Wake County Health Department has always kept high standard and has always kept you safe long before this event. Small businesses across America are suffering, including my own. They are not getting the funds. I've applied 13 times to keep this from ever happening. If Roy Cooper would let down this obscure policy in which, after this month, I don't have the rent. We care deeply about anybody that's lost, and my heart goes out to anyone who's lost somebody because of this. I've always protected my customers. This is about peacefully protesting.
Our forefathers would be proud. You are a true patriot.
My father is proud. There are repercussions to everything. I'm fully aware of it. I'm fully aware and am going to accept the consequences of my actions."
Yeah, that's... I'll tell you, this is honestly, this is just horrendous. I think what's happening is just horrendous. I really am angry at what governors and governments are doing to American people. And we're going to talk about that's the theme of the show this morning, as a matter of fact. One of the things that came to my attention, I have gotten numbers from everywhere, okay? Numbers, this shows this shows this. I'm on a list that where people argue, oh, these are the death numbers, these are not the death numbers, these are the number of people infected. This is what the CDC says, this is what other people say. And I've come to the conclusion that almost nothing is trustworthy. And that's why I don't use a lot of numbers with you. The CDC is now saying 60,000 people in America are dead. Well, are they from COVID? We don't know, because we are hearing that coroners have been being forced around the country to count deaths as COVID deaths that are not COVID deaths. I heard an inside, I'll just say this, of an incident in Ohio where a coroner was being forced by the health department to count the death of a man by an accident as a COVID death. Now, that's just one incident, but I know it's true. I just was reading this morning in the Daily Wire, Pennsylvania was forced to remove hundreds of deaths from the coronavirus death count after the coroner raised red flags. The Pennsylvania Health Department decided to include probable coronaviruses, death viruses. In other words, people were not tested, they just guessed probable, and so they slapped corona on the death certificate, claim them as corona deaths. Pennsylvania started to include probable deaths in its fatalities. As a result, the total number of coronavirus deaths grew by 276, then 360 in successive nights, almost doubling the number of deaths in the state in 2 days. I could go on and on. They say that the Health Secretary Rachel Levin in Pennsylvania decided to include probable deaths from the very beginning. And so they're not clear about what the real number is of deaths from coronavirus. And that's why I think it's really important to hear what other people are saying about this. Actually, Dr. Jensen was on with Laura Ingraham. I think we played part of this last week, and I wanted to revisit it. Let's play clip 16.
In cases where a definite diagnosis of COVID cannot be made, but is suspected or likely, like the circumstances are compelling with a reasonable degree of certainty, it is acceptable to report COVID-19 on a death certificate as probable or presumed. So, doctor, what's the problem with that?
Well, in short, it's ridiculous. I spent some time earlier today just going through the CDC's manual on how to complete death certificates and the parts that were specifically written for physicians. And in that manual, it talks of precision and specificity, and that's what we were trained with. The determination of the cause of death is a big deal. It has impact on estate planning. It has impact on future generations. And the idea that we're going to allow people to massage and sort of game the numbers is a real issue, because we're going to undermine the trust. And right now, as we see politicians doing things that aren't necessarily motivated on fact and science, the public's going to, their trust in politicians is already wearing thin.
And doctor, in that same CDC guidance sheet on COVID-19, it references the fact that basically this is a judgment call for doctors on how to fit, you know, I read it, how to, what goes on line one, and then what goes on line two, and what goes on the final line, as far as contributing factors and ultimate cause of death. But they concede that it is a judgment call. Again, why is that not correct?
Let's just take influenza. If I have a patient died a month ago, had fever, cough, and died after 3 days, and maybe had been an elderly, fragile individual, and there happened to be an influenza epidemic around our community, I wouldn't put influenza on the death certificate, and I've never been encouraged to do so. I would put probably respiratory arrest would be the top line, and the underlying cause of disease would be pneumonia. And in the contributing factors, I might well put emphysema or congestive heart failure. But I would never put influenza down as the underlying cause of death, and yet that's what we're being asked to do here.
All right, that's just a little bit of Dr. Jensen's interview with Laura Ingraham. These are the problems. We cannot trust these numbers. So I think that we are left to use our common sense and see truth is what comports with reality. That's what we have to look for. What's really real? What are we seeing around us? When we come back, a couple from Michigan who's defying Governor Whitmer will join us. Stay tuned.
Here are Tim and Riley Wildman for the AFA Foundation.
Riley, I know Dan Celia works with us at the AFA Foundation. In fact, he advises you guys all the time. and you hear about him talk about the AFA Foundation on his radio program. So you work closely with Dan?
Yes, sir, I do. And so does Chelsea and Jessica.
So Dan Celia of Financial Issues, the charitable gift annuity is probably the most popular product, if you will, that you guys offer in the AFA Foundation. What does that do?
You basically give a lump sum to AFA, and then in return you receive a fixed amount coming back to them for the rest of their life. And then when they pass away, the money is left to AFA to leave a legacy.
Contact Riley Wildman and her staff at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Craig Middlebrook, Deputy Administrator of the St. Lawrence Seaway Development Corporation. His office is responsible for construction, operation, and maintenance of the seaway to promote trade and transportation. Leviticus 25:14 reminds us of the importance of conducting fair and honest trade and commerce. And in the business of trading goods for money, do not wrong one another. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Craig Middlebrook in his daily task. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. The National Day of Prayer is this Thursday. For more details, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. There is growing unrest around the nation. Americans, citizens, tired of staying at home, weary of mandatory quarantines. In California, there are calls for civil disobedience. This after the state's Democrat governor ordered the closure of beaches and parks in Michigan. Hundreds of armed patriots stormed the state capitol, demanding the governor there reopen the state. And in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, restaurant owner Weldon Boyd has reopened Buoys on the Boulevard. He was cited by the Republican governor for allowing diners to eat fried fish in the parking lot. Mr. Boyd spoke for many when he pointed out that Walmart and McDonald's are open for business, so why can't he be? Corporate America making millions of dollars while mom and pop businesses are suffering. And unless Democrat lawmakers ease up on restrictions and allow small business owners to reopen, the unrest and civil disobedience will spread. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
To Michigan now. The governor doubling down on her power to issue stay-at-home orders after protesters swarmed the state capitol building, some of them armed with guns. Mike Tobin's watching that, covering it from our Midwest Bureau. Hey, Mike.
To talk about the armed demonstrators storming the Capitol. Very upset with Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. She pushed back, extending the emergency declaration by executive order. And that was after the legislature refused to approve her extension of the emergency declaration. Anticipate a court challenge in Michigan because one of the things the legislature there did was approve a resolution authorizing a lawsuit against the governor. Now, President Trump weighed in with a tweet saying the governor of Michigan should give a little. Put out the fire. These are very good people, but they are angry. They want their lives back safely. See them. Talk to them, make a deal. But here in Illinois, watching the demonstrations and the people gathered up, I asked if they were concerned about getting too close and spreading the disease or catching their disease, and they said it is their right to risk their own health.
All right, that was Mike Tobin from Fox News reporting on what's happening in Michigan. We've been talking about Michigan a lot. Gretchen Whitmer has come to me to be one of the most frightening characters, and there is a pretty large lineup of people who seem to be very much enjoying their power over other people. That's my interpretation. We know that Michigan, according to the stats, if you can trust them, has been hard hit. They've seen more than 4,000 people die of coronavirus. Of course, again, statistically, that's very minuscule when you think of the population. But that doesn't mean people's deaths don't matter, their lives don't matter. It just means people die every day, everywhere. People die. People die of viral pneumonia. They die of flu. They die of accidents. They die of... We are all going to die. So statistically, it's still not a big statistic in Michigan. By the way, Governor Whitmer extended her state's lockdown until May 28th. When she's had these protests, and this is they've had at least two, she's responded by just cracking down. And before I introduce our next guest, I want you to hear her yesterday. She was with Jake Tapper on CNN, and this is how it went down, clip 9.
These protests came after President Trump tweeted, liberate Michigan. He tweeted, quote, the governor of Michigan should give a little, put out the fire. He said that these are very good people about the protesters that were featured in the video, to which the executive director of the Jewish Democratic Council of America, Haley Sofer, who is from Lansing, Michigan, she compared those comments to President Trump referring to those marching alongside neo-Nazis in Charlottesville as very fine people. Is that how you see these protesters in that vein, in that extreme?
Well, some of the outrageousness of what happened at our Capitol this week, you know, depicted some of the worst racism and awful parts of our history in this country. You know, the Confederate flags and nooses, the swastikas, the, you know, behavior that you've seen in all of the clips is not representative of who we are in Michigan. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, we're in a global pandemic. This isn't something we just negotiate ourselves out of, and it's a political matter. This is a public health crisis that has taken the lives of almost 70,000 Americans, has put 30 million people into unemployment. We've lost in the last 24 hours almost the same number of Americans that were killed on 9/11, and that's just in the last 24 hours. We need to listen to the expertise in our institutions of higher learning, in our health system, and make decisions that are going to protect the lives of everyone. Whether you agree with me or not, I'm working to protect your life if you live in the state of Michigan. I'm going to continue to do my job, regardless of what tweets come out or what polls come out or what people think that is, you know, makes sense. We're going to listen to facts and science because we've got to get this right.
That was Governor Gretchen Whitmer yesterday with Jake Tapper, and now here's her story. She is just saving lives. She's just trying to save lives. These protesters, they are racist. They have Confederate flags. They have nooses when they protest, swastikas. Those are the kind of people that are doing that because she is in the business of saving lives. Well, I've asked a couple of people who live in Michigan and are very much involved in the resistance, I guess I could say that, against Gretchen Whitmer. And you can assess for yourself what kind of people are protesting. Jay and Heather Allen are from Newaygo, Michigan. They are a family that lives and works there, and I want you to get to know them a little bit and hear their personal story. Jay and Heather, first of all, Jay, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us.
And Heather, same to you. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Jay, let me ask you to just respond to what, before we get into the details of what's happening with you guys, respond to what Gretchen Whitmer said yesterday with Jake Tapper.
You know, I just think it's incredible that our government leaders, like our governor, think that they need to protect us or keep us safe. You know, when she said that, it's, you know, we're there for her to... You know, we'd like her to govern, not to, we don't need her to keep us safe. We are adults and we own businesses and we feel like we can make decisions. When we bring our children home from the hospital, they're ours to take care of and, you know, our lives are ours as well that God's given us. And we feel it's not up to her to keep us safe. We can make those decisions as responsible, you know, functioning citizens in our society that love others. And, you know, we don't need her to keep us safe. We can make those decisions on our own.
Heather, you guys were at one of those rallies. I don't guess the one at the Capitol, unless I just don't know, but the one before that, the car rally. Did you see people with nooses and Confederate flags and swastikas? I'm just curious, really. Did you see that?
No, we did not. And other than a small Antifa protest, we didn't see really any negative behavior. It was a feeling of camaraderie between small business owners and really just the desire to get back to work. We saw really respectful behavior, actually.
Yeah. And Jay, let's talk first of all about what it is that you do. It's pretty interesting stuff, I think. You are the owner and operator of Jay Allen's Guided Fly Fishing Service. Okay, so tell us, you know, in your real life and your love, what is it that you do?
Well, I'm a fishing guide on the Muskegon River in New Lego, Michigan. And, you know, I usually take two clients a day out fishing and enjoy being out in the God's creation. And we have a great time. You know, my peak season are very, they're a couple, two and a half months long on each side of the summer. You know, so March, April, May into June is a extremely important season for me in terms of making money for the family. And then again in September, October, November, and into December are the other peak seasons, or the other peak season. And they're very critical. I don't work 5 days a week during those seasons. I work 7 days a week for maybe 2 weeks straight, and I have a day off and do the same thing. So it's not like a normal job, so, you know, it really doesn't fit into any. And I know a lot of other small business owners that have the exact same thing going on. We don't fit into a little box, and we need to support our families. So
yeah.
It's a very niche business, but that's in a nutshell what I do.
Jane, is Newaygo in Newaygo County, is that kind of a – I was reading about it a little bit. You guys are on a river, right? And you are – it's a like a vortex of lots of different bodies of water. So I guess hunting and fishing and wildlife is kind of a big thing there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a community that thrives on tourism. We have some other factories and other type of businesses, but largely we survive on tourism, which Michigan is, you know, a huge tourism state. So absolutely, the Muskegon River flows right through Newaygo, Michigan, and then there's just a ton of small lakes that people enjoy, whether they're fishing, canoeing, kayaking. You know, those are all activities that bring people into this little city and keep it going.
So when did this crackdown or this lockdown? Now, all states have gone through it, but Gretchen Whitmer's, when she initiated it, was pretty draconian. So how did that affect your business? You're outdoors, you're on a river, you take two people at a time?
Yes, and I have a 17-foot boat, so even if you take away our right to decide to be, you know, with other people, we can still be inside of the social distancing.
Yeah, but what happened?
Oh, they just shut it down completely. They said you'll be stopped, fined. Of course you hear things. I've looked at a lot of stuff up on the and even talked to the DNR officers. They don't want to talk about it much because, I mean, I think a lot of them think it's ridiculous. But, I heard one guy said that he claims one of the DNR officers, you know, could take his boat away if he was aiding. I had to borrow a boat right at the beginning. I borrowed a boat from a friend, and he said, "Hey, if you're loaning your boat to Jay, because my boat had broken down for just a day," and he said he could be, you know, get in trouble too for aiding and abetting.
For aiding and abetting, you were going to borrow a boat so you could do your job, and he couldn't do that because he was concerned. Was that right?
Right, exactly. He was very concerned, some pressure put on it. But yeah, it shut down our entire peak season. With no exceptions, not listening to, hey, these guys do guiding different than the guys on Lake Michigan. Michigan boats are much bigger, but they also take, you know, a lot more people on those, and they're all crowded in a small space. So, you know, there's just such a sweeping, declaration by the governor that didn't take into consideration people that can do their job in what she considers safe or what the protocol for safety is now.
Okay, so you basically have lost your income for the last, 2 months or 3 months, however long this has been. And let's talk.
Right,
go ahead.
Oh, and if we have a flare-up, I'll lose it. It looks like, they're winding us up for a fall resurgence. That'll probably hit the second part of my year, so that would be pretty much the whole year, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much my whole year income here in Michigan.
Yeah. And Heather, you guys also have bought a historic building on, I guess, the Muskegon River, and have been restoring it for some time, making it into a hotel, a series of shops, local shops, dress shops, all kinds of shops. I know you're still in process. And you can call it Market 41. So tell us, you know, well, I should let you, what was it, what is it you have in mind for that building now that I filled in all those blanks?
Oh, yeah. So we bought an 1860s building and began remodeling it last spring. And we're bringing in a coffee shop with a local roaster. And we have a clothing store that just opened. They were supposed to open April 1st and had to delay their opening. And then we have Market 41, which sells old and new items. Combined, we have over 30 dealers. And then on the upper floors, we're planning to put in a small boutique hotel.
All right. So in the middle of this restoration, of which there, I'm sure, are tons of expenses, a lot more expenses than there is income, in those early stages, you guys were shut down. And you've been shut down for how many days would you, or months or weeks, whatever the measurement?
Right. Yeah. So we had to shut down on March 23rd. And we've been closed. We did reopen our retail spaces on May 1st. So on Friday, we opened back up. But we've not been able to resume construction quite yet.
Yeah, so basically the bottom line for you, both of you personally, Jay, your livelihood as fishing guide, and Heather's, you're doing the family's part, and, you know, I know that Jay runs a building too, but also he's gone a lot. So you're pretty much doing the business part of it, and both of your incomes have been pretty much obliterated. So as you said, Heather, on Friday, you guys decided to defy Governor Whitmer and open up. And I want to know what happened. Because what happens when you open up? I read a stat that 60% of Americans are still scared to death to go out, according to polls. They're scared to death to shop. They're scared they're going to get the virus. So what was the response when you opened up on Friday?
Yeah, so those that came in were really excited. There was just a happiness about being able to be out and see other people and connect. I felt like people were very respectful still of being conscientious about their distancing, but all in all, there was an elation about being able to get outside again, and that there were businesses that were beginning to open. And we decided to open and tweak a little bit because we were able to bring in items that would classify us as essential. And I only wish I had thought of it sooner to be able to get going again, because we have a lot of people in this store who depend on this as a large chunk of their income.
Yeah, so, all right, but the truth is, Heather and Jay, you guys are defying the governor's orders. And so you are really stepping out in a big way. And I just, before you guys join me, I've been talking about various instances around the country where people are doing this. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And is there any fear on your part that there may be repercussions and what those might look like?
Yeah,
I think we both have been praying about that and weighing out the outcome. And ultimately, we're responsible people. You know, we have children. None of them have died yet. And we love our neighbors, and we had to weigh the those things out, and are we willing to take a $1,000 fine or whatever the threat is? And we are. We want to be respectful, and we are. Typically, that's how we live our lives. We respect other people and their lives. I think we've struggled through it, and are willing to. We don't think our local police will do anything, but if the police wanted to help us,
You guys might make the headlines in ways you don't expect, but I wanted to just highlight your courage. Jay and Heather Allen, again, the business is called Market 41 in Newaygo County, Michigan. Thank you all so much. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The ear that listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The book of Proverbs is one that flows with abundant insight for wisdom. It shows that one of the most prominent qualities of wise people is that they welcome and even celebrate life-giving correction. In today's world, overrun by cultural Marxism, there is much discussion as to what segments of our society hate themselves. Well, Proverbs gives the answer. He who rejects life-giving correction despises himself. The truest demonstration of self-hatred is revealed by knuckleheads who refuse to humble themselves and embrace life-giving correction. Loving rebuke saves lives. Correction displays love.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The book of Hebrews contains sober warnings about the dangers of straying from the faith, but it also contains deep encouragement for those who stay the course. Be sure to listen this week as we conclude our study of this powerful book on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Life is difficult. Life is hard. It's not getting any easier. But here's what I know that's so wonderfully triumphant for every one of us. There's not anything you are ever going to experience or experiencing now that Jesus doesn't understand.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, The Jesus You May Not Know, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Ryan Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. One of the mantras of our friends on the political left is to never let a serious crisis go to waste. In this coronavirus panic-demic, Democrats have been yammering in unison about mandating nationwide mail-in voting. They love mail-in voting because it makes it easy to cheat. The Heritage Foundation has records of at least 20 elections demonstrably and fraudulently won through vote by mail. Democrats used mail-in voting and ballot harvesting, where anybody can turn in somebody else's ballot, to turn Orange County from red to blue in 2016 and to flip 7 legislative seats in 2018. This year alone, 24 million ballots will be mailed out to ineligible voters. That's 24 million opportunities to cheat. To protect election integrity, we must return to in-person voting and voter ID.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump will always be remembered as the president who led the country through the wartime period precipitated when the Chinese Communist Party unleashed the invisible enemy, the CCP virus, and resulting pandemic upon us and the rest of the world. The single most important accomplishment of the Trump presidency, however, may be his efforts to prevent an even worse catastrophe than what we're currently experiencing. In an executive order issued in March 2019 and another one unveiled last week, Mr. Trump has explicitly recognized that the vulnerability of our electric grid to attack or natural disruptions constitutes a national emergency. Without electricity, there's no America. For the potential importance of this legacy to be achieved, however, the president will have to ensure that the deep state-riddled bureaucracy and hostile special interests, notably among the utility sector, do as directed, starting now. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Big crowds of protesters that went into the Michigan state capitol without masks, massing together in close quarters. I'm not asking you about their First Amendment right to protest. That, of course, they have. But from a public health standpoint, is that safe?
It's devastatingly worrisome to me personally, because if they go home and infect their grandmother or their grandfather who has a comorbid condition and they have a serious or an unfortunate outcome, they will feel guilty for the rest of our lives. So we need to protect each other at the same time we're voicing our discontent.
Could I just say that any of you that have elderly or fragile family members or friends should always protect them. If you're going to visit someone in the hospital who's really sick or is undergoing chemotherapy or something like that, yes, take every precaution. Do not put your family members or your loved ones at risk. But that does not equate to suiting up every time you go out in case, just on the outside chance, that there might be someone somewhere in your life that day, in the store, in a parking lot, anywhere. You have to protect the unknown person from the unknown thing that might be happening to them. This is, to me, the irrationality of this. Of course, we take care around people that we know are vulnerable. We should always do that. If we have a cold or a flu or what, we don't go out. We don't send our kids to school. We don't go to work. That is just part of our cultural understanding. That doesn't mean everyone does it. No one's shot if they do that, but it's part of the cultural norm of courtesy and respect and care for others. And so we don't need, you know, the government. We don't need Deborah Birx telling us that, well, she could tell us, but forcing us to suit up every time we go out, suit up and mask up because you might meet someone who's vulnerable. You might, even though you don't think you do, you might be carrying something. And so on the outside chance of that, you shouldn't go out. You shouldn't really go out. You should just stay home. And then if you go out, man, you better suit up and cover every part of you, or at least your mouth and your face, because you might be carrying something that you don't know about, and you might be with people who might catch something. It is that bizarre. It is really and truly that bizarre. You know, Tate Reeves, the governor of Mississippi, was considering reopening today parts of Mississippi and pulled back that, delayed it at the last minute. So Chris Wallace had him on yesterday on Fox News Sunday, and he's asking Governor Reeves, you know, well, you can hear what he asked because I asked Adam to pull that question. So let's just listen to the exchange and listen to it carefully. This is clip 14.
Governor, you already have gone from a stay-at-home order to a safer-at-home order, and you were going to lift up the restrictions even a little bit more on Friday, 2 days ago, until you saw a new spike in cases in your state. So where are you now in Mississippi?
Well, thank you for having me on, Chris. What I would tell you is that we had a one-day spike. We went up to 392 cases that were reported early Friday morning. We didn't have time to analyze the data before we made the announcement, and we're trying to be very cautious. And so we said, let's analyze the data over the weekend. And what we have found is that it was really a data dump. We got a large number of tests that came in from out-of-state private labs. What we found is yesterday we reported 220 new cases. This morning or later today we'll report less than 110 new cases. So it was a one-day blip, but we wanted to make sure we investigate that data before we make a final decision. So we delayed it.
Yeah, so Chris Wallace continues with the narrative that Mississippi, the Republican governor of Mississippi, shut down, you know, because the cases, you know, basically spiked, and so they decided to shut down. And Governor Reeves specifies, well, wait, we had a spike in the numbers Friday morning, and we didn't know what that was all about. So we thought, man, there's a spike. We better not go ahead. But then when they looked at it, why, it was a data dump from labs from out of town that we didn't know about and that spiked the numbers. It wasn't really that we had a sudden outbreak of corona. So I just have to say, I hear this and I go, wonder why suddenly from out of state all of these data would come in when the governor had decided to open Mississippi on Monday. Why would suddenly this dump come on Friday? I just don't know. And I really don't know. It's just that I see here, again, that I've shared with you, that Pennsylvania has been forced to remove hundreds of deaths from their coronavirus death count because they were counting, well, people that hadn't even been tested. But, well, you know, likely. They probably likely died. And I already told you about the story. I've been told that in Ohio, there's a man who died of an accident, just a plain old accident, and the coroner is being forced by the health department to count it as COVID. That's just one anecdotal story, but methinks this is happening all over the place. And I want to share with you, this is an article from The Blaze that came out yesterday, and it's an interview with a Nobel Prize-winning scientist. His name is Professor Michael Levitt. He teaches structural biology at Stanford School of Medicine. He won the 2013 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. And this is what he says. Coronavirus data show that sweeping lockdown measures were an overreaction. They may actually backfire. Leavitt has been analyzing the COVID-19 outbreak from a statistical perspective since January and has been remarkably accurate in his predictions. The data show that the outbreak never actually grew exponentially, suggesting harsh lockdown measures, which have drastically impacted the world economy and were probably unnecessary. This is kind of a synopsis. His observation is a simple one, that in an outbreak after outbreak of this disease, a similar mathematical pattern is observable regardless of government interventions. In other words, no matter what governments have done around the world or state to state, regardless of what they've done, there's a similar mathematical pattern. After around a two-week exponential growth of cases and subsequently deaths, some kind of break kicks in and growth starts slowing down. The curve quickly becomes sub-exponential. This may seem like a technical distinction, but its implications are profound. The unmitigated scenarios modeled by, among others, the Imperial College, this is the model that Dr. Fauci and Deborah Birx used, okay, the one from the Imperial College. So that's what he's referring to. So let me go back. This may seem like a technical distinction, but its implications are profound. The unmitigated scenarios modeled by, among others, Imperial College, and which tilted governments across the world into drastic action, relied on a presumption of continued exponential growth. That with a consistent, this I don't understand because I'm not a mathematician, but he says that with a consistent R number of significantly above one and a consistent death rate, very quickly, the majority of the population would be infected and huge numbers of deaths would be recorded. But Professor Leavitt's point is that that hasn't actually happened anywhere, even in countries that have been relatively lax in their responses. So Leavitt said that developing herd immunity is a better strategy to fighting a virus. He says, I think the policy of herd immunity is the right policy. I think Britain was on exactly the right track before they were fed wrong numbers, and they made a huge mistake. I see the standout winners at Germany and Sweden. They didn't practice too much lockdown, and they got enough people sick to get some herd immunity. I see the standout losers as countries like Austria, Australia, and Israel that had very strict lockdown but didn't have many cases. They have damaged their economies, caused massive social damage, damaged the educational year of their children, but they did not obtain any herd immunity. There is no doubt in my mind that when we come to look back on this, the damage done by lockdown will exceed any saving of lives by a huge factor. And that, again, is from Professor Michael Leavitt from Stanford School of Medicine. Boy, he'll be in trouble, won't he? He will be in trouble for saying these things. By the way, we'll put that article on our Facebook page, along with the one from the Daily Wire about Pennsylvania and other coroners overcounting deaths, being asked to overcount deaths. It's Pennsylvania forced to remove hundreds of deaths from coronavirus death count after coroners raise red flags. Someone pointed out, someone that I trust sent me something this morning and said that suicides are up 300% and hotline calls. Now, I don't really know what, domestic violence. Domestic violence hotline calls are up by 800%. Now, there are other kinds of tragedies taking place. We just talked to Heather and Jay up in Newaygo, Michigan. They have lost their income. They have children in school. They have a son in college. They have expenses. They bought a building. They have to pay it back. The mortgage doesn't stop just because, you know, their businesses can't open and they can't do business. This is and that's one couple. You know, I played you the video of that tattoo artist in Colorado, arrested because he opened up his parlor and he's standing on his porch and saying, I will not be able to feed my family. I will not be able to pay my mortgage. I'm going to lose everything. And so you arrest me if you must, but I had to reopen. And so anyway, they did take him away. They arrested him. So, this is what I see. I also looked at the numbers because I told you lots of people have been sending me lots of numbers. The one thing I did notice, if these numbers are true, this is the USA COVID-19 stats. I was just looking at the deceased, the numbers of deceased, and it is very interesting to me that every single state that has large numbers of deaths, New York is the largest, 24,069, according to this, New Jersey, 7,538, Massachusetts, that little tiny state, has 3,716, Illinois has 2,457, California, 2,124, which is actually very small when you consider the size of California, Pennsylvania, 2,651, and Michigan, 3,866. All of those states, the high earners, the head of their class, the top of the chart, are blue states with blue governors, with blue coroners. I just can't help but notice that, because then also on this are Florida and Texas, both highly populated, dense, Texas not so dense, Florida more dense. They've got millions and millions of people. Probably, you know, Florida rivals New York. I'm sure it does. I don't know what the number is. I'm sorry. I should have looked them up. I don't know. This is an assumption on my part, so you can look the numbers up. And those of you that think I'm not speaking accurately here, but I think Florida is as populated pretty much as New York, more so. It has how many deaths? 1,314. Yeah, so, but the difference is, of course, in Florida, Texas has 849 out of millions. The difference is, to me, on its face, Florida and Texas just happen to be red states with red governors and perhaps red coroners. So just saying, there's enough here to be suspicious about. I also want to talk to you about something else. Do I? Yes, I do. How many of you do Nextdoor Connection? I'm talking about something I only know in the most surface way. I don't spend a lot of time online because I'm already online many, many hours a day doing my show and researching. But so I don't mess around on online to do like Nextdoor. But many of you do. And so a mutual friend posted on Nextdoor, but lo and behold, he mentions H1N1. And he talks about something. Well, here, I'll just read you what he says. The reality is that most places aren't doing this. He's talking about social distancing, and neither are most customers. If I hectored every business owner where the employees weren't wearing masks, I would be on the phone all day, from grocery stores to gas stations to convenience stores to takeout places. Drive just a few miles away from this area, he's talking about the D.C. area, and you'll find most people are just getting on with things, maskless, and not living in fear. He said one person explained it to me this way: people come from places where death and disease are parts of life in ways very different from the United States. They are laughing at our terror at a disease that so far is the same as H1N1 and are not afraid like that. They have faith that in the end it will all work out. And so that's what he said. But guess what? His post was taken down, and he was scolded that I don't remember the exact words here, but this is the policy he got in return. So Nextdoor Connection is saying, if you post about the COVID-19 thing, you must use guidance from CDC or World Health Organization and include a link to your source. Please use the terms coronavirus or COVID-19 when referring to the virus. So Nextdoor is monitoring your posts. And you must cite the CDC or the World Health Organization. And if you're like my friend, you cannot mention H1N1. He got away with it by spelling it out in a different way after he was rejected initially. So the control is just amazing. And it's dangerous. And that's why I speak to you the way I do every day. I just want you to be alert and diligent. And we need to reclaim our freedom. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.